Hey, listeners, are you getting inspired to dive deeper into your learning of EFFT? If so, head on over to Catherine's website to check out her list of upcoming trainings. Some trainings are focused on combining EFFT with young kids and EFFT play therapy. So head on over to her website and we hope to see you in the future. Check it out at KATHRYNDEBRUIN.com, KATHRYNDEBRUIN.com, and we hope to see you in the future.
Welcome to the Family Express podcast, where our destination is resilient and connected families. Come aboard with your hosts, marriage and family therapists Catherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans, to explore the world of emotionally focused family therapy, a model developed by Sue Johnson and colleagues. Together with our guest speakers, our travels will map the EFFT landscape, highlighting lessons learned, shared fears, and the passion and curiosity that bonds our community.
Welcome back, listeners, to the next episode of the Family Express podcast with Catherine DeBrain and Rhonda Evans. Our lovely guest today is Colleen Anderson out of South Africa. Welcome, Colleen. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Rhonda. It's lovely to be with you guys.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I know that you're a very special person in the EFT South Africa community, and we are on a major time change as we record this today. So thank you so much for making yourself available despite the time zone difference. We appreciate you.
Yes, yeah, no, that's a pleasure.
Colleen, I'm excited to always spend time with you, my friend, and to get a perspective from the other side of the world, the tip of South Africa where you live. I know you've lived in other countries as well.
Yes.
And I know that you were part of learning EFFT from the beginning. And more recently, you've taken the course and you're working with families, with adult children. So very excited to hear what you have to say about your learning process.
Okay, well, thanks, Catherine. Thank you. Okay, so shall I launch on?
Do.
Okay. So I'm an EFT therapist, and I've just completed Jim Furrow and Gail Palmer's Emotionally Focused Family Therapy online training. And I'm particularly interested in the work they do around the parent-child dyad. This is because in my private practice, I have adult children as old as 63 coming in to see me because they are still struggling in their relationship with a parent. I also then have parents coming to see me who are struggling with their children. So the EFT training, as you can imagine, has added immense value to my work with parent-child dyads. Mm-hmm. So today what I'm going to do is I'm going to spotlight some of what I have learned.
Okay.
That I know is going to help me immensely in my work. Okay.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Yeah.
Yes. So as I've said, quite a few of my clients are adult children. So I was very interested to learn that in the parent-child dyad work, the child always remains a child across the lifespan. The attachment needs of a child to be seen, heard, and valued are still relevant in adult-child relationships. Mm-hmm. Attachment theory would see these needs are present from the cradle to the grave. That's and not true. Just as an early developmental experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's important to remember, right? To hold on to.
Yes. So to hold on to that, which was very important for me because I didn't really know that before I did the course, that I was often wondering at what point is a child no longer a child? So we may be less dependent on our parents, but we never outgrow the need for our parents to see who we really are and to value who we are. That's so mm-hmm. important.
I love the way you say that. Yeah, because the needs do change developmentally through the lifespan. But it's important to remember that no matter how old you are as an adult child,
yes.
you want your parent to know you.
That's
you want
right.
to influence your parent, right?
And yes.
what your
yes.
parents think about you, even at
yes.
that
age. Exactly. Even at that age. So with adult children, relationships and attachment goes one way, right? It goes one way. It goes from parents giving care to children receiving care. And this is across the board as well. This differs when we are working with couples, because with couples, it's bilateral. Attachment goes both ways. But the important thing for me to learn was that attachment goes one way, always from the parent to the child.
Mm-hmm.
The parent-child dyad is part of a caregiving system. The caregiving system has two parts. Caregiving coming from the parent and children receiving that caregiving. So it's also a dance between parent and child. However, it's the parent's responsibility to give the care. Mm-hmm. And it's the child's responsibility to reach for the parent and send clear signals
mm-hmm.
in terms of their own attachment needs and to receive care from the parent.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. So just like couples in EFT, parents and children get stuck in negative reactive patterns of interaction that dominate the relationship.
Yeah.
After repeated cycles, the attachment system gets blocked on both sides, leaving both of them alienated and alone. Our goal is to open up the caregiving system and meet attachment needs of the child.
Mm-hmm.
And very wonderfully, EFFT gives us a map to help the parent-child dyad move towards secure attachment. And what this would look like is the child reaching for the parent and the parent responding appropriately
mm-hmm.
to that need.
I love it. I love that there's a map, right? It makes me feel so much.
Yes, yes. So through repetitions of that cycle, one creates a secure bond. Okay, now. So now we begin our work with a parent-child dyad. Once we have listened to the presenting problem from both sides, we mirror and reflect present process. Then we tell them that the negative pattern of interaction is responsible for the distress they are both feeling, and it's blocking them from seeing one another accurately and feeling empathy for one another.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we reframe the problem as the negative pattern, and mm-hmm. we tell them that we are going to try and find a way for them to have a different conversation with one another. And in shaping these new connections, we keep the alliance strong on both sides. We need to hold both sides and make sense of both perspectives.
Yeah, I love it.
Okay.
So you're saying make sure you have an alliance with each person, that each person in this family or in this room has a voice.
Yes.
And then start to move the conversation away from content, a particular identified patient, into what's the process of how this family communicates, particularly yes. when things are emotional and there's distress.
Yes, exactly. So what I really like to hear, which was a big learning for me, is that EFFT tells me to begin working with the parent, because in stage one, we are working towards parental openness.
Mm-hmm.
And this makes sense, because the lack of parental openness and availability drives the pattern and mm-hmm. creates a disruption in the caregiving alliance.
And that doesn't mean, Colleen, that we don't hear from the child or give the child a voice. It simply means we're focusing on change happening
yes.
in the caregiving dyad, right?
Right. That's right. That's right. And we're basically opening up the parent so that the child can actually move into vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
But the parent needs to be available and accessible and open. So that's in stage one. So in stage one, we are working towards parental accessibility and responsiveness. This is the marker for being able to shift more directly to stage two and accessing the child's vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
So once we've opened the parent up and they are available and accessible and responsive, then we know we can move over to the child more directly.
Yeah.
Okay, Catherine, all good?
Yeah, no, I was loving it. I was taking a deep breath because that's easily said and harder to do.
That's
so important. And I think my sigh was like, oh, because then I finally get to work with a kiddo, which is what I'm wanting to do the whole time.
Exactly.
You do have to move through stage one first.
Yes. And so
that you have caregivers who are acceptable, responsive, and engaged so that kids don't get dropped and get hurt.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So I liked your sigh because actually that was a very quick little piece I said there, but that takes a lot of heart.
Exactly, yes, yes. So if it's taking you a while,
Yes. Normal.
Don't be surprised. And such brilliant, important work to do for a family system.
Yes, exactly. So before we take a deep dive into parental blocks to openness, we need to resource the parent by being accepting, validating, and understanding presence. We are attuning to what's happening inside and what's happening between in the relationship. At the same time, we are assessing the underlying emotions that are underneath the disconnect. So we've got to stay in the attachment channel. That's something Sue was very, very staunch about. And follow the emotions and have attachment significance, because emotion is the music of the bond. From the very beginning of therapy, we want to evoke attachment longings as a way to call for the attachment caregiving system.
Mm-hmm.
We do this by tapping into attachment desire for the parent to give care and the need for the child to receive it by saying something like this to the parent. When you get stuck like this, there's no way you can be there and give comfort and support to your child that you would want to. It's like you can't reach. You can't actually touch them in the way that they need. And to the child, you might say, it's kind of like you're all alone when you really need someone to see you, to accept you and stand beside you.
Mm. Okay, wait. I just want to make sure I'm remembering this. So as you're working with each person, you know attachment is down there.
Yes.
You know that parents want to be good parents. You know that kids need their parents.
Yes.
And so whether or not they're speaking that, you bring it in.
Yes.
You put it on. You attachify.
Yes.
You speak to the system to bring it alive, because you know that it's there and it might be dormant, but you have to believe that's there to do.
Yes. That's right.
So you speak it into being. I love it.
Yes, exactly. You speak it there, right there.
Yeah.
So thus, we want to call for the caregiving system right from the very first contact. We start speaking into
it. Colleen, I have to use a South African reference right now. Have you ever been to Hermanus, this tiny little town, Rhonda, on the southern tip of Africa? And in Hermanus, that it's where I have seen like the most remarkable whales.
It's
this tiny little town. There's these rocks, there's this ocean, and probably a number of months of the year, they have whale callers. Okay, so you're either sitting on park benches, there's this beautiful walking trail, a lot of people are sitting in restaurants, and then you're sitting, in fact, we took Jim Furrow there when he first came to South Africa.
Oh, he must have loved it.
I'm telling you, we were sitting in a restaurant with my godparents who live there.
Yes.
And suddenly we hear, I can't make it well. Okay. But these people
beautiful.
Have wailing horns.
Yes. Oh, and gorgeous.
As they blow on the wailing horns, the whales come right up to the rocks. And so we ran out, and you can see the whales right here.
How exciting.
Hang out and play. So, oh my gosh, like you want to call. For that caregiver's
exactly. That was a very good metaphor, Catherine. Very powerful. I could see the whales being called.
Right? And then everyone comes running because it's there.
Yes, it's fantastic. Oh, how exciting. Anyway, so back to intent to care now. One of the strongest things we can do when working with the parental blocks is to find the parent's intent to care in their reactivity. For example, reframing dad's sadness in terms of his parental intent to care. So the therapist might say something like, "That makes you feel so sad, Dad, to recognize that you just haven't been there with your son when he really needed you. And that makes you feel so sad because he matters to you. He's just so important to you."
Mm-hmm.
And that is the attachment reframe, attachify, right? Yeah. There.
Yeah.
We are making sense of Dad's sadness in relationship to his caregiving role. We always are keeping Dad in the caregiving role. This is not Dad as a person. This is Dad as a caregiver to his son. So the emotion is made sense of in relationship to the child. The enactment from the dad would be, "I feel sad, but the sadness is something I don't express. What I express is my anger, but underneath the anger is sadness." And the child is seeing this then and seeing something very different. So the child might say, "Oh, I always see you angry. I didn't know you were ever sad."
About me. Wow.
Yes, the sad about me. I didn't know that. I just saw this angry face, which freaked me out.
Yeah.
But actually, hearing that you're sad now, I didn't know that, Dad. Okay, so moving on, one way to restore emotional balance when a caregiver gets stuck is to get support from another adult. Because sometimes these parents actually get stuck while you're working with them. So what we need to do as a therapist is we need to resource the parent for their caregiving responses and help them to find their stronger, wiser other. We're working for parents to find their representational flexibility and balance.
That's a big word.
That is a big word.
Representational flexibility.
Yes, representational flexibility. So we're talking about their view of self in that moment and view of other. That's what that's meaning there.
As a parent, like?
As a parent, yeah. So I will make that clearer a bit further on, unless you would like to, let's clear it out right now.
No, let's keep it top of mind and be curious.
Okay, we'll be curious. When we get to it, I'll bring you to it.
Okay.
When a parent feels supported by another adult, the parent's view of self, okay, this is where we're going, becomes, "I'm comfortable, I'm competent, I have what it takes to assure my child, and my child's needs make sense to me. I see my child, I understand my child, I can respond effectively." The child then gets to see the parent as responsive and available. And when that attachment need is met, the child has a more positive view of self and sees themselves as lovable. And when this process is repeated over and over again, there's a growing sense of confidence in the child's sense of their parent's availability and responsiveness, and they are better able to co-regulate the emotional experience with their parents. We all know that children need stronger, wiser others in their lives, a secure base. We know this from EFT, that they can rely on, where they can find confidence in their emotional experience. And they also need truthful, accurate communication. Okay?
Love it. Yeah.
Okay.
Truthful and accurate.
Accurate communication. So from the heart, mm-hmm. Not all of this secondary stuff, the cycles.
Yeah, clear messages. Yeah.
Clear messages. So this comes not from having a good relationship with your child, but having support of other adults. That's that stronger, wiser other support where you're resourcing the parent.
Yeah.
Okay. So sometimes the parent actually loses their flexibility, and they have a very rigid view of their child as the problem. And we may need to have a couple of individual sessions with them to get their buy-in. So parental buy-in makes sense, particularly when you have parents that are discouraged, burnt out, and feel like they have nothing else to offer, and they come in looking for help. And that's what I come across all the time. Burnt out parents who feel they have nothing to offer. They're desperate and they have no connection with their child.
Yeah.
So we can organize some sessions for them to do buy-in. And EFFT really beautifully and succinctly says that you make four moves here.
Yeah.
And our first move is to reflect on parental caregiving intent. We validate the parent's frustration and concern for their child, and we emphasize that they have these feelings because they care about their child and the child matters to them.
Yeah.
This helps parents believe in their own value and worth at a time when they feel like they've failed. So that's what our first move. We go back to parental intent.
Yeah.
Caregiving intent. Then our second move is to highlight the importance of the parent and their irreplaceability in the child's life. I think that's such an important feature that they are irreplaceable because they'll never have another father or another mother other than the one they've got.
Yeah. So I just want to go back to that because I felt my heart opening with compassion.
Yes.
That often as parents or caregivers come in and they're pretty desperate, burnt out, focused on the kid from an anxious place.
Yes.
Understanding that whatever that energy is like, they are desperate for help and support in achieving something that's important to them for their kids.
Yes.
We can feel pressure as the therapist, or we can get annoyed, or we can have a reaction to that. But it's essential to know that that energy comes from their care.
Yes.
And their intent as parents.
Yes.
We do have to get their buy-in. That's an important part of the process because it's pretty easy to step in and take over and do stuff with their kids. But then we're sending a message to the parents that they are, in fact, useless or ineffective and we're doing it better, right?
Yes.
You have to believe in the parents' ability and build up their confidence.
Exactly.
And getting them back in a position to work themselves.
Exactly. And that's why I think this buy-in thing is ingenious that Jim and Gail have come up with. Because you step back a bit and you go over it, the intent to care, how important and irreplaceable they are. And then our third move is to empathize with the parents' struggle and their need for support. We really become empathic with them. We want to find them to be successful and to find confidence in their relationship with their child. So we do this by coming alongside them with empathy and concern for their frustration with their child. I mean, as parents, we all know what it's like to feel frustrated with our children. So it's easy. We come alongside them. And finally, in move four, we help them see the problem as a relational block that's there, rather than focusing on the child as the problem. We tell them that therapy can be a resource that will help them unstick this block and can help them have a different conversation with their child, one that will pull their child towards them and not push them away. So that's the piece that we would do to get the parent to buy in to the process if they are very rigidly stuck.
Okay. Very important, a parental buy-in, and there's four moves that help us be able to do that.
Yes, those four moves, which is really nice and succinct. It could take a whole session as we fluff those out. So,
and then if I could just jump in, as we say the four moves, just to clarify for our listeners, four moves, these four moves you're talking about, Colleen, we're not talking about the tango moves, just because
thanks for clarifying.
Just because we use the same word move. So tango moves, we have five tango moves. What you're talking about, Colleen, to me, I always think of it as we have four mini objectives towards the goal of parental openness.
Yes, absolutely right. Thanks for clarifying that. I've just got really into this move thing. So I made that up, the move part. I might have got it in the work. I can't remember. I'll have to check. But so those moves are actually objectives. Okay. So Now I'd like to talk about vulnerability here, because we're moving into stage one, from stage one to stage two, but we use vulnerability for the parents in stage one to create openness and engagement. So we always put their hurt and sadness in the context of their longing for a relationship with their child and in the context of care, rather than the parent talking about their sadness and how they feel because they failed their child. I think that's a very important point when working in the child, parent-child dyad, is to know the difference how you use vulnerability in stage one with the parent and in vulnerability in stage two with the child, because they are different. Mm-hmm. So as a therapist, I'm trusting that their tears and sadness, and this is something you mentioned earlier on, Catherine, I am trusting that their tears and sadness are an indication of their care, and we help them make sense of their feelings so that with our help, they can speak from their heart, because that's what we want them to do. It's not about parents' vulnerability per se. It's about how the vulnerability blocks the parent from having the relationship they want with their child. So we keep the parent in the caregiver role, keeping the interaction about hurt and how the child got impacted. Okay.
I'm with Catherine. Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, that's good. Okay, well, now we've spoken about the parent, we've spoken about the vulnerability, we've spoken about the intent to care, the stronger wise other, getting their buy-in and the vulnerability. Now we are going to move over to working with the child.
Okay.
At this point, we're finally moving over to working with the child.
So stage one, you're building an alliance with each person. You're focused on the negative cycle. You are getting parental buy-in.
Yes.
Point of their openness.
Yes.
Once you have that parental openness, which means parents are not focused on the problem anymore.
Yes.
Curious, they see their impact on their kids.
Yes.
And they're ready to hear. They want to see, they want to do something different. And so that sets the stage for you now to go towards the kid in a way heightening in the stage.
Exactly, which is what we're ready for now.
Okay.
So now that we have the parent emotionally available, responsive and feeling confident that they have what it takes to assure their child and meet their child's needs, we begin our stage two work with the child. The reason we use vulnerability in stage two is to access attachment-related needs and engage those needs so that the parent can see their child more clearly, not to open up the parent's vulnerability so that the child can take care of the parent's needs. So that's the one way. As we work with the parent's vulnerability, we shore up the parent, helping them to deal with the disclosure of the child so that they can respond effectively to the child's vulnerability. The big difference is where we are going when we are processing child's vulnerability. We're deepening that vulnerability to access attachment affect and attachment needs. So when we get our child to touch in touch with their vulnerability, often our first step in that process is to counter the child's mistrust. We are asking them to do something that doesn't make sense to them at all, because that's not their experience. The child may protest to the parents, "You shouldn't be crying. I'm the one who's been hurt." So we are working to help the parent respond and use that availability and responsiveness to come alongside the child's mistrust and work that through so the child can begin to reach from that place of vulnerability with their need. The need for assurance, for contact, for the parents to believe in them, to hear them, to see their experience.
Okay, so I just want to highlight what you're saying, we're in stage two because parents are open.
Yes.
Now we go towards the child's affect.
Yes.
Which could be reactive.
Yes.
It could be frustration, could be mistrust.
Yes.
And then you eventually heighten and go underneath that.
Yes.
Well, you could also have the parents lean into the child's reactivity and understand.
Yes. Yes.
And get more curious about it. Yes. Then go deeper into the affect, which you know you're going to find.
Yes.
Attachment needs and longings.
Yes, yes.
The heart.
Exactly. 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 Okay. Exactly. Exactly. And so according to Bowlby, the child's motivation to reach for their needs from stronger, wiser others gets blocked for very good reasons. Parents don't see them, so they find ways of navigating around their needs. They might intensify and protest, or they might minimize and withdraw. They block their vulnerability like this. The therapist works towards accessing and deepening the child's attachment-related emotions. Often this is around protest, anger, or as you were saying earlier, Catherine, mistrust, fear, uncertainty. And the child is basically saying, you don't see me, you don't get me, you don't understand me. So we're using vulnerability here, not for attunement in the same way that we do with parents, but to help them move towards their needs. In order to prime a softer response from their parents and to move out to a place where they can make a bid for care. So that's what it's all about. So to move, yes.
Can I just jump in here? Because this feels like hold this pretty carefully, right? Okay. On the one hand, you're holding the caregivers open, curious, stay open, stay curious.
Yes.
Then towards kiddo. But kiddo could be quiet. Kiddo could be mad. Kiddo,
yes.
We have to be ready for however kiddo is.
Exactly.
And kiddo is reactive, and we're inviting more of that. Caregiver could quickly
exactly.
go and get caregiver's emotional balance back. Stand up straight.
Yes.
Do this. I believe in you.
Yes.
Building. Then the child. So if there's a little bit of back and forth there, right? Between holding caregivers open, helping child open up.
Yes.
That, like many of us who've been hurt in life, we're probably going to, what do you call it? Like test a little bit, right? Like be a little testy to see.
Exactly.
Are you really there? Is this too good to be true?
Yes.
So we got to really hold both for a little bit there as things shift.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, Catherine. That was very well said. So, the move we are seeking from the child at the end of stage two is that they can actually reach for their parents with their needs, and that the parents will respond in an emotionally open and engaged way, allowing them to create a new experience together and to have a different conversation, one where they are both able to see each other's hearts. So that's what we're looking for at the end.
Wow. To all the hearts open, right? The caregiver says, hey, I want to see you. I want to be here for you.
Yes.
I want to be that person. And the kids sharing whatever's coming up for them.
Yes.
Right. Those attachment needs. Like, I want to be seen and known and valued and loved.
Yes. Yes.
Whew.
Yeah.
That's
pretty
precious stuff, right? That's pretty.
It is. It's very precious stuff. And it's so motivating to do this work, to be able to help people like this, you know, when they're in this terrible space, because everybody's in a family. As Susan Johnson said, relationships all began in families. And there's so many families that struggle. So it's such good work.
Sure. I find it hard, but so powerful where we get to.
Yes, yes. It is very hard, but very, very powerful and very worthwhile. Almost like a calling to be able to do this work.
I like how you say that.
Yeah. So I want to make a note here on shame, because I think it's very important when we're doing this work that we note this. Because sometimes when the child opens up, the parent goes into shame and we lose them. So with shame, we want to name it, we want to acknowledge it, but we don't want to organize around it.
Mm-hmm.
You want to organize it to a more adaptive experience that is often there for most parents. So it would look like this. The therapist would say, I can see that the more you go into hating yourself, mom, the further away you move from your son. And then your son is left all alone with that feeling. And that's not your intention, mom. But you feel so bad about what happened. You can't help blaming yourself. When actually maybe you know what your son is needing is for you to come closer. Can we look at that? And then you zoom out and you make it more explicit what's happening in the moment as a pattern. And where shame takes her, and using parental intent as seeding attachment, you help the mom keep her balance by putting ground under her feet, that she's still there with good intention and wanting to be there for her child. That's the attunement.
Mm.
If it's totally inflexible, you may need to have parent-only sessions at this point.
Mm.
Because you can actually count on shame coming up and parental feelings of failure coming up in family therapy. It's something you can count on. But that's not helpful for the child to hear. It's more helpful for the child to hear about her mother's hurt feelings. So you don't organize around the mother feeling like a failure. You help her to stay with the hurt around her child rather than thinking down into her shame and failing her child. Be hurt with her. She's not alone. That message helps. The child can take in what the mother is saying about her. Your hurt matters to the mother, the therapist says. Your hurt matters because your child matters to you. This is what's been missing. This is a very different message to the child than you're a problem. So when we link shame with repair and remorse, it's about the child. I feel sad as a mom that I didn't show up as a mom, that I let you down, that I wasn't there for you, and I'm so sorry that happened. I feel the pain of shame as a parent, but I'm relating that to how it impacted my child. Mm-hmm. This brings the parent more present to the child. Otherwise, the child gets pulled into being into the parent's pain, and then the child is the caregiver.
Yeah. Colleen, this is important, right? Like, you've kind of walked us through the essential bits of this model, and you're saying, hey, you're going to expect shame to come up.
Yes.
It's going to be important to be able to spot that and know how to lean into that.
Yes.
We're not going to heighten that, go deeply into that.
Yes.
To help prop the parent up back to their parenting confidence.
Yes, you know, yes, like yes. And we tell them that they're having these feelings, these heavy feelings, these sad feelings, these fears, because they wouldn't have them if the child didn't matter. They wouldn't have them if this wasn't the most important person in their life.
Yeah.
So that's how we do it. So we really go into that.
Okay.
Oh, so that was quite a lot.
Wow. Friends?
Yes. Yeah, so now I'm moving into my little ending.
Okay.
If you're
yes.
If you're okay with that.
Yes.
Okay. So Susan Johnson, bless her, has always said that there is one EFT and three modalities: emotion-focused couples therapy, emotion-focused individual therapy, and emotion-focused family therapy. Love is always there, says Sue. It has just become hidden under a mound of fear and strategic defenses of self-protection. So I have just completed the trilogy. I am so pleased that I have now added emotion-focused family therapy to my repertoire. as I have thoroughly enjoyed seeing how Gail and Jim have tweaked EFT to make it wholly relevant and specific to working with families. I have particularly enjoyed learning about the subtle shifts that are necessary to work more effectively with parent-child dyads.
Wow. Oh my gosh, Colleen, I love the honor and respect to Sue and her amazing work. And I'm so glad that you're doing all three modalities. And what I know about you as a student and ongoing learner is you really study so deeply and systematically, and you've just walked us through so systematically how you're making sense of this. So thank you, thank you, thank you for your time on this.
And thank you, Catherine. Thanks for those kind words. I really appreciate them. And it's been wonderful spending time with you and Rhonda, and very nice to actually meet Rhonda for the first time. So that was really lovely. And thanks so much for inviting me onto your podcast. It's an absolute privilege for me too. So I really appreciate the invite. Thank you, Catherine.
Thanks, Colleen. Thank you again.
Okay.
That's it for today, folks. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again for our next journey.